is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And we are jumping on tonight to talk some NBA slash COVID. Hard to believe that we are back in.
Mike, I was going to say you're getting with the theme of our program tonight with the voice that you have right now.
It's really good. Yeah, it's not the best, but I kind of felt like maybe we were past having COVID-centered shows, but it looks like we're back, so that's unfortunate.
We're back, baby.
Yeah, anyways. We're back in a bad way.
Yep. All right, but we're going to start with the fun thing. Now, this has provided the COVID thing. Has provided many opportunities for me to pull people out of the...
Oh, no.
I will tell you, I had heard of one of these two players, Mike. All right, so I'm going to start with the one that I've heard of before. I've got two people. Okay. He started two games for this team.
Okay.
Armani Brooks.
You've heard of Armani Brooks.
I have.
Okay. I have not heard of Armani
Brooks. And I'll tell you why I've heard of him, Mike, before you give me... Because... They relatively recently played the Cavs.
He plays for the Houston Rockets.
There you go. Good job.
I only know that because I was under the assumption that he must be related to Aaron Brooks, who played a lot of his career for the Houston Rockets.
Oh, so you just took a guess?
I just took a guess. I did not know that he played for the Houston Rockets. But okay. All right, I'm one for two already. So I'm at my average. So if I can get lucky somehow on this one, okay. I got a one in thirty shot.
Here we go.
All right.
Vernon Carey Jr. He's played one game.
Vernon Carey Jr. Okay, Vernon Carey Jr. is from Duke.
Okay, you're right on that.
And he was a top 10 recruit for the Duke Blue Devils. I believe that he plays for – I've actually – it's funny because I had not heard of Armani Brooks, but Vernon Carey Jr., I've actually seen his name in a box score. Like, I remember seeing a game that he played in. I'm going to say the Charlotte Hornets.
Ding, ding, ding. 2 for 2, Mike. You are – you should get sick more often. Look at this.
All right.
There you go.
All right. That's pretty good.
That made this segment of the show short and quick. This is perfect. We're on track, Mike. This is really good.
My NBA knowledge is off the charts tonight.
I know.
It's going to be a great episode.
It is going to be. Listen, everyone, stay tuned. You never know what's going to be said. All right. Okay, so we're going to start with Adam Silver today. Had an interview with Malika Andrews from ESPN during the show. I don't remember what it's called. What's it called? NBA Today, the Richard Jefferson hosted show that's run at 3 o'clock daily.
The former Jump,
but now it's different, obviously. So Adam Silver had a lot to say. I'm just going to read the bullet points really quickly, and then we can talk about it. So Adam Silver says he has difficulty understanding what logic would be in pausing a season. The virus will not be eradicated in a two-week time period, so we have to learn to live with it. Adam Silver went on to say that 65% of players are boosted. He adds that they're not quite to the point where they'll only test if there are symptoms, but he thinks there's a chance that the NBA can show a path forward in terms of making virus part of life and moving on. NBA is actively looking at shortening the number of days a player can be out in protocols. Our ability to find a way to keep operating is also significant for society. I think there's a recognition that these are the cards we've been dealt. Of course, there's an unfairness that's involved. Adam Silver went on to say also that Omicron is beyond dominant variant right now that's showing up in players' tests. It's about 90% of the positive tests. So, I think money's at play here, obviously. Like, the NBA has already lost a lot of money. There had been a report earlier in the day, I don't know if you'd seen that the NBA has basically informed all 10 teams playing on Christmas Day that their intention is to play all those games. However, the games might get moved, as in times might get moved, because they are going to prioritize the ABC time slots, which are the 3 in the middle of the day. So if, for example, a middle of the day game can't happen, they may shift the 10 o'clock game to a middle of the day. Now, I don't know how that's going to go over with people who are going to be putting their butts in the stands, but they said that they would do it within a 24-hour time period. So Christmas Eve, everybody out there, you might, if you're going to one of those games, your game might get shifted. But other than that, I don't know what you think, Mike. I know I just threw a lot of information at you there. Take it away.
All right, let's start with the COVID piece and the potential pause of the season. I agree with Adam Silver in the standpoint that I don't think that pausing for 2 weeks or pausing for 3 weeks or even pausing for a month at this point is going to really make a difference. It doesn't seem like we're going to eradicate this specific variant, and it doesn't seem like we're going to eradicate COVID anytime soon. It seems like it's something that's going to be around for a while. I actually read a couple articles today where they were talking a little bit about how typically the way that a virus mutates and continues to live on is the first round of the virus is more dangerous, but not as easily transmissible. And then as the virus mutates, it becomes more transmissible, but less impactful or less strong in terms of the illness that it creates. So it seems like the coronavirus may be following that imprint, in that at least initially, they feel like this Omicron variant is obviously much more transmissible, but that it may not have the dangers in terms of death and hospitalization, especially for people who are vaccinated and boosted. So I guess from that standpoint, I don't see where a pause helps. And yet, I also agree with Adam Silver in that there is going to be some teams that are going to be adversely affected, especially if you think about when and how these teams end up losing multiple players and you have a lot of guys in the protocol. You could go through a 2-week stretch of your season where you could lose five or six games that could swing, especially with as close as these conferences are. I mean, the Western Conference, once you get past those first three teams, and then I think in the East, it's all bunched together, that 2 weeks where you go 1-5 or 1-6 can have a big swing on where you are in the standings. But everybody's facing those same risks and those same dangers. So I don't think that there's just nothing the NBA can do about that. And they're not, as you said, money talks, and they're not going to shut it down and lose all the money that they did the first season when they had to have the bubble and everything that goes along with that. I just don't see that happening. I think we're basically at a point where for the remainder of this season, we're going to have to live with players being out in the protocols. Maybe they tweak the testing where they allow players who are asymptomatic to come back sooner. I don't know enough about the exact testing procedure and the timing of those days to say what it's eventually going to settle at, but I would guess the NBA would do what they can to try to mitigate players missing time and try to get them back as soon as possible, as soon as they are no longer contagious. But it does seem like this particular variant is extremely contagious, and it does seem like this is what's spreading like wildfire throughout not just the NBA, but throughout the country, throughout the world. So I don't know where we go from here, but I do think that the NBA is not going to pause. They are going to continue to try to figure out ways to keep the best players, the product on the floor, and yet at the same time, keep everyone safe. So they're trying to show people how to deal with it, how to live with it. And maybe out of this comes a model that the rest of the world can look to in terms of, you've got to deal with it, we've got to figure out how to live with it, and this may be the best way to go forward with that.
Yeah, I just don't, like you said, I don't see a way that a pause is going to do anything. It's basically just going to shut things down for 2 weeks, and then we're going to be right back at it again. And it's not like you're going to put those people in a bubble. Because listen, it worked back last year where we put people in complete quarantine, no one went anywhere, everything shut down. That's not happening again. It's not happening ever. Ever is a strong word. But we saw what happened after that, and I just don't see that happening. I mean, I can't even imagine what would happen if that was to happen. I fear that day, Mike, because if that was to happen again, it would be very, very bad, I think. Other than that, like, as far as what Adam Silver said about changing testing, there you go, Mike, changing testing, once again, the NFL is basically going to go to a policy where if no one's got symptoms, they're not getting tested. I think that's, if my understanding is correct, if you don't have symptoms, you're not going to get tested after this week, which I think is kind of crazy, but you know, whatever. The NFL they've already messed around too much. I mean, they had to make all those changes because like the Browns and the Rams weren't going to be able to field a team if they would have played on Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know. And like Baker, for example, he still hasn't tested out of protocols, but he has no symptoms. He's had no symptoms the whole time. Stefanski's the same way. I mean, Stefanski's still holding press conferences for the Browns, no symptoms, and they haven't tested out. So I don't know what the path forward on that is. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm kind of getting worried about the All-Star game, Mike.
I don't know what that's going to look like here in Cleveland.
It's here, and not that I'm going to go because the tickets went on sale, Mike. I went to look to see what the cheapest ticket is for the All-Star game. You want to take a guess?
Cheapest ticket for the All-Star game
that
is...
I could find on the day that it, I don't know what it is now, but the day that they went live.
I would say $425.
Add $1,000 to that, Mike.
Okay.
$1,399 was the cheapest ticket I could find the day that tickets went on sale. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not going to that game.
Well, yeah. I was hoping if it would have been like $350, I maybe could have talked myself into it. But I don't see any way I could pay that much money for a glorified basketball game. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Although I don't know if it's going to happen because of all of what we're talking about, but with the top
75 players of all time. I know back in 97 when the 50th was here, it was cool to have all the old timers back in the fold back here in Cleveland for the various events. And obviously with COVID, we don't know if that's going to happen. So who knows?
Yeah. Anyways, so as far as the Christmas games go, Mike, what do you think about them possibly moving?
All right. Well, which games are here, the most diminished at this point?
Well, I mean, hold on.
Golden State and Phoenix is still pretty solid, right? That game I have to imagine is going to stay.
Yeah. So I'm pulling up the games right now. The Bucks game. I mean, who's going to watch that game? I mean, half the Bucks are out with injury or COVID. I mean, I don't know.
I would think that
the Nets game, the Nets Lakers game is pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, you have Anthony Davis who's obviously hurt, but then with Brooklyn,
the Lakers have five players in COVID, and the Nets have like 8 or 9 players in COVID right now.
Yeah, Dallas, no Luka. When's he supposed to be back from his ankle injury?
Who knows? But they've got 4 or 5 people. They just put 2 more people in COVID protocols today too. Utah has no one in COVID protocols. It stays away from the Utah people. I don't know why.
Well, and Porzingis didn't play tonight. I don't know. He's not in protocol, I don't think. Is he just hurt? I'm not sure. Maybe he's in protocol.
He may have been put in. It's so hard, Mike. I was trying to keep a running tab of all the people in protocol, but I'm gonna look real quick here.
I don't think you can keep track of.
Oh no, Kristaps hurt his foot yesterday.
Okay, that's what I thought. I didn't think he went in the protocol. So basically you have the Mavericks don't have Luka and don't have Porzingis. So I don't know how exciting that game ends up being. The problem is they probably should just shuffle the matchups, right? Forget about shuffling the games. Let's shuffle the matchups.
Put the Cavs in there. Although the Cavs are COVID now too, so never mind.
Yeah, the Cavs are – this was like the perfect time though for the Cavs to – be struck by COVID.
Well, they only have 2 games this week. They have
a game. That's what I'm saying. They don't play.
They play tomorrow, and then they play on Sunday. So, you know, and they got the one game canceled. So, the Cavs play the Boston Celtics tomorrow.
Then they play the Pelicans the day after Christmas, I believe.
Yeah, on Sunday. Yeah. No, they play the Raptors. They play the Raptors on Sunday, and then they play the Pelicans next Tuesday.
Okay, gotcha.
But by then, all these guys will theoretically be out, maybe, of protocols, hopefully.
You hope.
I mean, listen, we got Luke Kornet now, Mike.
Nice.
But listen, that's the other thing. All these players that are getting another chance. Look at Isaiah Thomas, Mike. He came in. You see how many
19.
Points?
19. Leading scorer, baby. Leading scorer for the Lakers.
I mean,
how's he doing tonight for the Lakers?
I don't know. Let me look it up.
Let's see. I'll tell you right now. I'm pulling it up right here. So Isaiah Thomas, he didn't get the start though. He's got 3 tonight. He's 1 for 7.
Oh, there is Isaiah. Here he is.
LeBron's got 23.
LeBron's halfway through the third. Yeah, LeBron's trying. I mean,
Lakers are in trouble, man. They're in trouble.
Yeah.
They're definitely a play-in team. I don't see how they get out of the play-in.
And I had them winning the Western Conference. No.
Well, there was a lot of people that did. There was a lot of people that overestimated the – I think you have to look at it and say that just to this point, LeBron hasn't been as good. And that's not to say that he's not still great, but he certainly hasn't
played. He's still a top-10 player in the league, right?
Right, but he's not – he's just not capable at this point of carrying an inferior roster, especially through a regular season where he's not trying to kill himself.
How about carrying a roster of a bunch of young guys?
Yeah. Well, not normally. Normally, this roster is not a bunch of young guys. It's a bunch of old guys, which makes it even worse. I mean, you look at the roster.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Cavs.
Yeah.
Well, he wouldn't have to carry the Cavs roster ready to come back.
He could come here and play like 20 minutes a game.
Do you want him to come back?
Do I? Okay. So I've been in this discussion with a few people, and this is what I wrote.
Okay.
I said, as crazy as it sounds, I don't know if it really makes the Cavs better. Would he be the best player on our roster? Probably. Would he be willing to buy into a team concept and share the basketball? I don't think so. That was what I said.
And I said, and I just said, listen, if he came back, would I be upset? No, I wouldn't be upset. If I came back, would I be excited? Sure, I'd be excited. If he came back, do I think we have a better chance to win? Maybe a slight chance, but also we have, the question is, what do we have to give up to get him? Or like, not that, like, what would he have to do? Because someone's minutes would be sacrificed. And obviously, sure, I can get rid of Dean Wade's minutes. I would definitely get rid of Dean Wade's minutes for LeBron James, okay? But at the same time, like, I don't know, the style of basketball, this isn't the way he's played basketball in his whole career. Would he be willing to accept that and just come in and not
can
have...
Can I answer that? Can I answer the question
no,
for you?
Right? The answer's no.
The answer's no. The answer's absolutely no. And I think that what the... It sounds crazy to say, but I think what the Cavs have built to this point, I just don't see what LeBron... I just don't think it makes sense because LeBron is going to still want to play like LeBron. He's going to be 42 or 43.
Speaking of which, he just got hurt.
LeBron got hurt?
Turned his ankle. Landing on Crowder's foot and turns his ankle.
Well, let's put it this way. If LeBron goes out for the Lakers over this next month, whew, I guess Russ will average 35, 15, and 15 over the next month, but Lakers aren't going to win many
games. And Isaiah Thomas might take 50 shots.
Yeah. Look, you know what? I don't think you want LeBron back in Cleveland. I think I would feel the same way you do. I don't think I would not be unhappy if he decided to come back, but I don't know that I'd be happy. I think the thing that worries me as much about what would happen on the floor is just what would happen off the floor. And I think the fact that the Cavs are building something and then you plug in LeBron, do they start mortgaging the future for the short term? And to me, that would be short-sighted.
Oh, now, LeBron stayed on the floor, Mike, just so you know.
Well, that's not surprising. We saw that. How many times did we see him get look like he got shot with a shotgun? It was laying on the floor.
Watching the video, rewound it. Watching the video didn't look good. Anyway, yeah. Oh, by the way, they flashed up a statistic, Mike. In his first 15 seasons, he missed 71 games over the 15 years.
Okay.
How many games do you think he's missed in the last four?
Since he's been with the Lakers?
The last four includes – that includes – oh, well, I guess – I don't know. It says the last four seasons. I guess it is the four seasons of the Lakers, I guess.
Yeah, so that first season he missed like the last 2 months. So you figure he missed probably 30 games that season. I would say he's probably missed – and this season he's missed like 15 of their 30 games or so. I would have to say he's probably missed 80.
70. So he missed 71 in his first 15 and 70 in his last four.
Well, he's not as durable at this point, and I mean, you can't expect
30,
him to be.
He's 36, 37 years old. I mean,
there's no precedent for a guy being – we're nitpicking here with LeBron. There's a guy – this is a guy
minutes,
who's 37.
The amount of minutes.
The amount of minutes, and there's never been anybody his age who's been this important to his team. Now, you could argue Kareem – was really important to the Lakers in
that was
the early
a different
to
game,
80s.
Though. That was a different game, then.
Different game, and still.
And he, I mean, how much did Kareem weigh, Mike?
Kareem, I don't know, but Kareem was surrounded by great players and had to play. He wasn't a guy doing everything for his team. He could still hit his sky hook and he could still score, but it wasn't the same as what LeBron is doing in his age. There's just no precedent for somebody doing the things that he does. And I think the problem lies, as it does with any aging athlete, is at what point do they come to the realization, if they ever do, that, hey, I'm slightly diminished and I have to either pick and choose my spots, which I think LeBron has done. But I also think that the nature of how he plays basketball, it's going to be really hard for him to settle in to a different role than the one that he's always shared. Although there is an example of a guy on his team who certainly has shifted roles, right? Carmelo?
He got ejected in the third quarter, by the way.
Carmelo?
Yeah, he got ejected.
Okay, well, he's nonetheless, when you think about Carmelo's prime and the type of player that he was versus the type
Hall
of player
of Famer.
He is now, he is, no question. And I think you could at least say Carmelo's always been a scorer, and I guess that's still his role now. He's just doing it in a slightly different way and not having an opportunity to have the ball in his hands. But let's put it this way, the track record of LeBron and what we've seen over the years in his career does not lead you to believe in any way, shape, or form that he's going to take a step back and not play the way he's always played. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Lakers are in trouble. And if LeBron, let's put it this way, I'm not pining away for LeBron to come back to the Cavs at this point.
Yeah. And like I said, if he came back and was willing to accept that role, I probably would be okay with it. But he's not. I mean, obviously right now he has to be ball dominant. I would love to know the stats. I'm sure I could find them somewhere right now, like this game, how much of the time he's had the ball in his hands versus other players, especially right now when Russell Westbrook's off the floor. That just means LeBron's got the ball. I mean, we just had two straight possessions of LeBron dribbling it. He like would pass it to Trevor Ariza, and Ariza looked around and then immediately passed it back to LeBron.
There so it's you go. Like,
I mean, so he's definitely carrying the load right now, you know, obviously with Davis out. And I mean, listen, LeBron's probably really happy about that fourth championship, but the fact that Anthony Davis has been basically more fragile than Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving were in his 4 years in Cleveland, like, he has to somewhat be thinking, like, was this the right move? Like, I know it got him one championship, but there had to be something that could have been better than that, right?
I agree with you. I would think if you, deep down, truth serum, you ask LeBron, hey, are you happy with the Anthony Davis pairing? I don't know how you would say yes. I mean, I know you get one title out of it, but Davis has not been as good as what we all thought he was going to be when he first went to the Lakers.
I mean, it's an honest question, Mike. I know okay. Anthony Davis will probably go down as a quote-unquote better player, but I would say Kyrie Irving is a better teammate to LeBron. True or false? Better pairing.
Well, I've said all along that I think Kyrie, to me, was the perfect guy to play next to LeBron because he's a guy who, look, Kyrie is phenomenal with the ball in his hands. You think about the skill that he has with the basketball and his ability to handle and create shots, you could make an argument that Kyrie is one of the five best one-on-one players in the NBA right now. And yet at the same time, he's also a guy who doesn't need to have the ball, which is crazy to say for a guy who's as good with the ball as he is, but he's also capable of playing off the ball and finishing plays, shooting off the catch, doing all the things that we saw him do in Cleveland. And then when LeBron rests, you put the ball in Kyrie's hands and he can do things. Anthony Davis is not that same type of player. He just doesn't have that take charge gene in him, for lack of a better way of saying it. And I don't know. To me, they're an awkward pairing because they sort of play the same position, although they play it very, very differently. But the reality is that, especially at the age that LeBron is now, that the best lineups for the Lakers involve Anthony Davis playing the five, which, again, he's resisted for a lot of his career, and LeBron playing the four. And that isn't both of their natural positions. They both probably – LeBron has been a 3/point guard for his entire career, and AD wants to play the four. But it's not a perfect hand-in-glove pairing the way that LeBron and Kyrie were. And I think, to me, Kyrie's always been the perfect second banana to LeBron. And obviously there was some friction there behind the scenes between the two of them, but I think – if you look at it strictly from a basketball standpoint and forget the personalities, which I know you can't as an NBA team, an NBA coach, an NBA franchise, managing those personalities is critical in order to make it last. And the Cavs weren't able to make it last. Well, they made it last long enough to win one title and get to four finals, but they didn't do it in such a way that enabled those guys to stay together long term. Because on a basketball standpoint, they fit together probably better than any two players out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dwayne Wade might have an argument too. I mean, they played well together. But I don't know. I think Kyrie's definitely better than Anthony Davis as a teammate. You know, I don't know. I think Kyrie or Anthony Davis will probably go down as a quote unquote better player in his career, maybe, because I mean Kyrie's just goofy anyway, so who knows. But I guess, do you want to talk about that at all, about him being a part-time player and then immediately getting put on the COVID list? Do we want to talk about that? Is that even worth our time, Mike?
I mean, I don't know what you really even say about it. I think if you're Brooklyn, I guess it makes sense when guys are going to be in and out of the lineup with COVID that if you just know this guy's going to be in and out of the lineup, then fine. It is interesting that they activate him and then he immediately goes into protocols. So look, is it an ideal situation? Obviously not, or Brooklyn would have done it right from the start, right? They back in the fall during training camp, they would have just said, hey, this guy, we're fine. He's going to play all road games. We want him to be part of the team. And they obviously didn't say that. So clearly they would prefer not to have him be a part-time player. But because they're going to have so many players over the course of the season that are going to miss games by being put in protocols, if you have a guy available that he's only available for half the games, well, you might have some of your regular players that are only going to be available for what amounts to half the game. So would you rather have Kyrie or a G League player playing in those road games? I think the answer is obvious. You'd rather have Kyrie. If you're going to be pulling guys up from the G League or off street free agents, then why wouldn't you rather have Kyrie Irving as your guy that's coming in as a roster filler, as opposed to some of these other guys? So I understand it. I think in an ideal world, would Brooklyn want it? No, but it's better than the alternative.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I didn't think of it that way. I just thought it was a joke. Anyways, as far as the rest of the league is concerned, like, do we want to talk about the Christmas games? Like, if they were to happen, which ones we would look forward to the most? Like we normally do, Mike. Does that say make sense?
Sure. We can take like 2 minutes. I mean, it's hard to say because of what each one is going to look like, but let's just go through them one at a time. We can kind of share quick thoughts.
First game's Hawks Knicks. I have zero interest in watching that game.
Yeah, I mean that game is not all that interesting.
I think at the beginning of the season it was interesting, like before we saw the teams play, you know, because of what happened in the postseason last year.
Well, the Knicks have been bad. Kemba Walker, I know he's back playing, but he's been a disappointment. Fournier's been a disappointment. New York has, I don't know if underachieved is the right word, or maybe they've just regressed to the mean from where they were last year. RJ Barrett hasn't been as good. To me, I don't have a lot of interest in watching the Knicks. I still think the Hawks, who are, I believe, a game below 500, I still think that the Hawks at some point are going to right the ship and figure it out. And I feel like they're a top six team in the East, but maybe I'm overestimating them. I don't love watching the Hawks play. We obviously got a chance to see Trae Young play really well in the playoffs, and he's probably played as he's figured it out this season. He's gotten better as the season's gone along. He's not able to draw as many free throws as he was last year, but he is playing really well, and John Collins is having a good year. But yeah, this game, even at full strength, this game probably to me would be the least interesting of the five.
Yep. All right. So then the second game of the day is the Celtics-Bucks, and I mean, once again, I think theoretically that's an interesting game, but we don't even know. I mean, I don't think Giannis is not on the COVID list. He's just injured. So, is he in the COVID list? I don't even remember. It's really hard to keep track.
He was on the COVID protocols. That's why he was out, but he may have an injury too.
Yeah. So anyway, it was Middleton who's not in the COVID list that was injured. See, that's
correct. Middleton hurt his knee.
So like, I don't know. Is this game interesting? I don't think so.
No. First of all, I don't like watching Boston.
Well, you're going to have to watch them tomorrow, Mike. Maybe.
Yeah, but I'm watching the Cavs. I don't care about watching the Celtics. There's been a lot of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum talk about whether those two guys can play together. To be honest with you, I don't really enjoy watching either one of those guys. And I still think that they're the type of players that other teams want when you think about big wings who can score. But I don't know. I'm not convinced that based on what we've seen over the last 3-4 years that you can build a championship roster with those two guys as your two best players. It still feels like they need feels like they need Kyrie Irving, the best version of Kyrie Irving, which obviously didn't work out in Boston. But I don't know. That Boston, I just don't enjoy watching those that team play. I don't particularly enjoy watching Tatum and Brown play. So Milwaukee without all their guys, that's a game that is not must-see TV for me.
Yep. Yeah, not must-see TV for sure. All right. Then I guess the only game of the day that to me is interesting to watch because of everything is the Warriors-Suns game. But quite frankly, I'm not going to be watching that game, Mike, because the Cleveland Browns play at the same time.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe I'll be able to turn it on at halftime because the Browns are playing the Packers and we have half our roster's COVID list. But that's probably the only game as it's currently constituted that I'm interested in watching. I mean, the Suns are at pretty much full strength, and I think the Warriors are at full strength other than Clay. Although I feel like I saw someone go on the COVID list for the Warriors today. But I can't even keep track of this nonsense. So I'm going to look really quickly while you talk, and then I'll tell you if someone's on the COVID list once I figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, that game is probably the marquee game. And as you said, Phoenix is at full strength. Golden State is pretty much at full strength. I think that should be the headliner game unless something happens in the next day or two where more guys disappear and go onto the COVID list. Two best teams in the West, two best records overall in the NBA. Clearly, they've separated themselves from the rest of the league. So that's the game I think that the NBA has gotten right, putting it at 5 p.m., and I would imagine that game is going to stay there. But as you said, we'll probably at best be flipping back and forth to watch a little bit of that game in between plays that the Browns are playing. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't see anything about anyone from the Warriors being on the list. And I'm just looking at Woj's timeline because he's normally the one. The Kings are in trouble right now. They got the newest outbreak. They've got like 8 people in, and them and Toronto.
Didn't I read somewhere that cross border games have been paused or something? Toronto could be in trouble as far as guys traveling back and forth to Toronto. I thought I remember reading that. Maybe it was just somebody speculating that was going to happen, but it certainly seems like that potentially could be the case where...
Well, it might have to do with what the Toronto Blue Jays did, play in like a different city.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Well, the Raptors obviously played in Tampa last year, but they moved their entire operations there for the entire season. That's a little different than kind of what they're facing at this point. But I would think that that's got to be at least a semi-real possibility, doesn't it?
I mean, theoretically, sir, sure.
So, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that either. And then the other two games, like we already talked about, like the Lakers Nets. That's boring. I mean, basically all the players for the Nets that anyone would want to watch are in COVID protocols, right? Is Harden in protocols?
He was. I don't know if he's out yet, but he was.
Yeah, yeah. So and basically, Durant's they all went to a facility in Atlanta when they were down there.
Maybe, like, maybe got some wings. Got some wings with Lou Will.
Yeah, and then the last game I guess is kind of interesting, but the Jazz and the Mavs. But if the Mavs don't have their two best players, then no one cares.
Utah's going to destroy them if that's the case.
So these games are a bunch of stinkers, except for that middle game.
Yeah, Golden State Phoenix is the marquee game for sure, and all the rest of them are severely compromised at least at this point, unless a bunch of guys clear protocol and are back in, which seems unlikely. But you never know. We still have what. 3 days, maybe it happens.
Yeah, yeah. We'll hope for a miracle, I guess. But Westbrook's just turning over really, really bad. A lot, Mike. Just like normal. Anyways, I don't really have much else to say. I know we wanted to kind of keep this shorter. Do we want to talk to Browns? Is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, we didn't really talk about the Cavs, but you know, they've been playing good.
Hasn't been much Cavs news. I think the biggest thing prior to the protocols was just, to me, the biggest thing was the last 3 or 4 games that Isaac Okoro has played. And we talked about it last week that if he could become a viable offensive player, that now you really, if you can start to look at him as a core piece that you can build around and that you're going to want to have around long term, then the Cavs have really got something. In the last three games or four games, he really started to pick it up offensively and looked much better than he had earlier in the season. So if that's real and that can continue, then this team's going to continue to stay in that top six spot in the Eastern Conference, which is still stunning to me. It's still really hard to believe. But you look at where we are, and we're a third of the way through the season, and they have the best point differential in the Eastern Conference. It's frankly, it's not even close. Like, we're almost at plus six, and the Nets are at plus 3.5. So it seems like it's at this point, it's real. It still feels a little bit like fool's gold, but then when you look at their individual players and how well they've been playing, and as we said, the fact that they're all young and that they're going to continue to progress and get better, plus the schedule, it seems hard to believe that they're going to fall back too far in the standings. I mean, I don't expect them to finish third when it's all said and done, but it certainly looks like they're on track to get a top six seed for sure.
Yeah. And I'll take that.
Absolutely.
Take it. Take that.
There would have been no way we'd have thought that coming into the season. I mean, there was no possible way. Nobody foresaw what was going to happen. And every one of their core guys has, I would say, outperformed expectations heading into the season. And not outperformed them in a way that it's not sustainable, but just they've gotten better faster than I think what people thought. Obviously, everybody liked Mobley, but nobody saw the defensive impact that he was going to have. Jared Allen, people thought he was solid, especially on the defensive end of the floor, but he's gotten so much better offensively than people thought. Garland, I think going into this season, he was the talk of a lot of people saying, hey, he could be the most improved player. This guy's coming. He's going to be really good. But the fact of the matter is he actually got there and he's met those expectations and he's played. He's been the guy that has really taken a leap this year that people thought he was going to improve, but he's gotten better by leaps and bounds. We've talked about that a lot, how lost he looked as a rookie. And it just seemed like this was another pick that maybe the Cavs blew. And now you look at it and you go, man, I think it was listening to, I don't know if it was Simmons or the Zach Lopod, but you remember that draft and the Cavs picked Garland 5, the Hawks traded up to number 4 to get DeAndre Hunter. And I think they traded two picks. And then those two picks were Jackson Hayes and I can't remember the other guy, but basically all the people involved in that trade, the point was is that if Atlanta just would have stayed put and they could have had Garland, I guess you already had Trae Young, but nonetheless, or maybe it was the Pelicans who traded out of that spot to pick up two extra picks. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The Pelicans traded out of the 4 spot, and if they just would have stayed at 4 and taken Garland, but again, the draft obviously is a complete crapshoot, hard to know what's going to happen, but it seems like the Cavs have gotten it right in the last few picks that they've really done a good job with who they drafted. Mobley's obviously a home run, and it seems like Garland's a home run too. If you can hit two home runs of guys that are close in age, then you got an opportunity to build a real team, and I think that's what we have.
Yep, for sure. And I've been really encouraged, and you know, it'll be interesting. Obviously, half our roster is in protocols right now, so tomorrow could be a I'm going to take tomorrow with a grain of salt. If they just come out and they compete, I mean, luckily they'll have Garland, Markkanen playing, and Rubio, and Love. So,
well, they spanked the Timberwolves with this team, right?
No, we had Mobley. We had Allen, and we had, because Allen's in protocols now. He played the other day. I don't remember all the other players there that are in protocols. Some guys that I never heard of.
Hey, nonetheless, believe in the Cavs, man. Believe.
Well, yeah, I'll believe, but we're going to need a big effort from Luke Kornet tomorrow.
There you go.
And then we signed Justin Anderson, too. I don't know who that is, but. And Ed Davis got put into protocols. They got put into protocols as well. So, whatever.
Nope. Whatever skeleton crew the Cavs can roll out there, hopefully they can play well and keep the good feeling, the good vibes alive.
Yep. Well, I guess Celtics have 7 players in protocols too. So,
all right. So it could be like a G League game.
Oh yeah. So the ones that. So here's who's in protocols right now: Denzel Valentine, Dylan Windler. He wasn't going to play anyways. He literally almost died the other night. You see that?
Yeah, that was rough. That was rough.
Lamar Stevens, R.J. Nembhard. Never heard of him. Jaren Allen, Isaac Okoro, and Evan Mobley. So those are the players currently. And then Ed Davis was added today. So.
Yeah. It's a skeleton crew, but whatever.
We'll see what happens. Anyways.
Yep.
All right. Do you want to talk Cavs really quickly? Browns. Yeah. I mean, I give them a lot of credit. They went out there with literally a skeleton crew. And they had a chance to win in the end. Mullins did a great job managing the game. They lost the game. Here's where the problem was, Mike. I think we had to really analyze ourselves there on that third down play, third and three. Instead of running the ball and killing 20 seconds, they needed to throw the ball and trust Mullins. He had just did a great drive. Trust him to make a completion and get a first down there, because then we win that game. But you could run the ball with Chubb too, but that was a terrible play call. And I know hindsight's 20/20, and I can't blame the defense. The defense, once again, probably overperformed what they should have performed at, considering half of our secondary was out, half of our defensive line out. When Tack McKinley blew his Achilles, a linebacking core was decimated. The defense did everything they could do. Our offense couldn't do much. But at the same time, when you've got three new offensive linemen, you got a quarterback who's literally been on the team for like a week, like there's nothing you can really ask for them. They came out there, they competed, and they had a chance to win.
Yeah, I agree with you on almost all your points that you made. I think the third down, you could certainly, it's defensible why you run there. Chubb and running the ball well. And if you pick up that first down, the game's over. At the same time, you would have liked to see them throw, maybe get a rollout where the quarterback has an option of being able to run. Mullins, it seemed like throughout the game, was making good decisions. So it wouldn't have frightened me that much to put the ball in his hands in that situation and let him throw. But I can understand why they ran the ball. It's disappointing because you're basically one first down away from wrapping up that game. Even when you get the interception with whatever, 2.5 minutes to go, felt like, okay, we've got it. And then you just remember that, oh yeah, we got to get a first down and we're probably going to run it. So it was going to be tough sledding no matter what. And then I think you made a great point about the defense and how compromised they were and how many guys are out. And I think Myles Garrett having that whatever groin injury that he had, if you watched him once that happened, he was pretty much ineffective. He just couldn't push off and he didn't have the same burst that he obviously normally has. And I think that in that last drive, I think that made that was a big factor.
Well, him and McKinley both being out. Like, McKinley being out and him being injured, it's just...
Right. Yeah, we couldn't get the kind of pass rush that we wanted, and therefore we had to blitz, and then we didn't get the cover. And I told you, I said, I would have just thrown the blitz at him, and I guess we did throw it at him a couple times, and Carr was able to get completions, and then the guy knocks home a 48-yard field goal like it's nothing. So it was a disappointing loss, but at the same time, what are you going to do when you're missing 20 players off your roster? You can only be so disappointed. So hopefully they start to get a few of these guys back. I don't know what the Packers game looks like. No, there's no result in the NFL this year that would be surprising. The Arizona-Detroit game being probably example one of that. So could the Browns beat the Packers? Sure, they could. I don't think the Packers, even though they're the number one seed in the NFC, I don't think anybody thinks that they're completely dominant, that you have no chance. And then you still have an opportunity to play Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. If you win those two games, you probably got a pretty good shot at winning the division. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens. It's a complete crapshoot at this point.
Yep.
But oh well.
All right, let's leave it there. Make sure that you check out our episodes that we have coming out soon. The one that we did this week, we had Andy Winters, the head men's basketball coach from Otterbein University here in Columbus, Ohio. That episode went up Monday. Coming up on Friday, New Year's Eve, we have an interview with David Cooks, who is an author, a speaker, a former high school and college basketball coach who was paralyzed by a spinal aneurysm when he was 15. And his story is very inspiring. And I think it's an episode that everybody's going to enjoy. So check those out. We want everybody to have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. As I said, we'll be back on Christmas Eve with that David Cooks episode. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.